on this episode of The Commercial Break.
Oh yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. It's your only co-host coming to you live from the actual COVID Christmas castle. As every single person in this household, including those that are visiting for the holidays, has had or is having a bout with coronavirus 19 or whatever the fuck we're calling it these days. In any case, my dog won't stop barking, my in-laws won't stop sneezing, and my kids won't stop pouring weird fluids out of every orifice in their body. Therefore, I cannot convince any rational human being to come in and record with me. So, no new episode just for today. We'll probably have a new episode tomorrow. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the most listened to 40 minutes of the TCB season number 4. What would that be? I know this just aired a couple of months ago, but if you haven't heard it, it's fucking wild. Steve tells us about going to clown school, getting kicked out of the Carnival Cruise Clown Posse or whatever he was a part of, and locking himself in a room with Mike Tyson and doing blow for 5 hours. This is one guy who definitely has more interesting drug stories than I do. But then again, I'm just a blowhard who likes to listen to myself talk. So here's Tina and I interviewing Steve-O in a wide-ranging conversation with a super interesting guy. Season number 5 starts just 7 days from now. More interviews, more games, more goofing off, and of course, more Frankie B. We've also got a big announcement coming January 15th, so please do tune in. And I want to thank you, Chrissy and I want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts, being just as sincere as I possibly can on The Commercial Break. Everyone out there in the podcast universe who has listened has been really good to us in 2023, and I hope you stick around in 2024. Happy New Year. Best to you. Enjoy our conversation with Mr. O.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Steve, what's going on, my friend?
I'm hanging tough. I've got my beautiful Wendy, good girl.
I think that kind of disarms your guests a little bit. Like, they get to pet the dog and hang out there for a minute.
Yeah, you know, like, I disarm my guests a lot, I think, and that has to do with me bringing the studio to them.
Yeah.
With the van. I think people just come out of, like, their home, and then all of a sudden they're on camera, and they don't, it's pretty awesome.
They kind of get, it's like interrupted from the normal flow of activity that they walk into some publicist's room with a camera and snapshots and all that. I think you give them kind of a homey feel. I was just sharing with Steve that I watched the Bill Burr episode of Wild Ride, which is fantastic. You have to check it out. His podcast and his vodcast. But I was watching the Bill Burr episode, and instantaneously, Bill's like, he's so relaxed. He's like, oh, let me pet your dog for a few minutes and we'll shoot the shit. I love it. Who told you you should go do a podcast and you decided to put it into a van and ride around?
Well, being that I tour at doing live comedy.
Yep.
It really is kind of an important piece of the puzzle to do a podcast. I recognized that, but I just hated the idea of asking that annoying question of my famous friends, like, will you be on my podcast? Like, I just, you know, like, it was so difficult for me to come around to that the only way I could is if I made it convenient by bringing it's a lot easier to ask somebody to be on your podcast if you say, I'll bring the studio to you whenever and wherever.
Exactly.
Convenient.
You can roll up to their front door, basically. Do you, let me ask you a question, because I've been dying to ask this since I heard you were coming on the show. You lived in Venezuela when you were a kid. Is that correct?
It is. I don't remember it. I moved there when I was 2 years old, I believe, and lived there, I think, for less than 2 years. I left when I was 4, I believe. So I don't remember any of it, but I did definitely speak fluent Spanish in nursery school in Caracas, Venezuela.
Have you kept that up? Have you kept the Spanish up?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I lost Spanish and Portuguese. My first words were in Portuguese.
Here is why I ask that question and why it's so canny to me or uncanny to me. My wife is Venezuelan. Like, you know, born in Venezuela, and then I chased her around the world and asked her to come to the United States with me. Now we have children, and so they're learning all about, you know, they're learning Spanish. There's a bilingual household. And I thought that was so fascinating. How did you end up in Venezuela? I'm assuming because your family, your dad took a job there. Wasn't he like an executive for PepsiCo or something?
He was. I was born in England. My dad was working for Procter & Gamble, and when I was 6 months old, the family moved to Brazil because dad became the president of Pepsi-Cola Brazil.
Oh.
And I was raised by live-in maids. That's why I spoke my first words in Portuguese. Then dad got a promotion to like a larger territory of South and Central America. And that's why we moved to Venezuela.
It's such a beautiful country. I want to go visit, but, you know, there's some things to be considered now. I think it was a different country. You and I are around the same age. It was a different country back then than it is now. So it's not, you know, it's a little unsafe to travel to Venezuela as a gringo. But I can't wait to go because I've heard it's beautiful. I've seen so many pictures and the people there are lovely. It's so lovely. I married one, Steve. So and congratulations on your engagement, too. I know you got engaged about a year ago. Is that right?
It's been more than that. We've been on a real marathon engagement.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, which is good.
It's okay. Long engagements are okay. I think they're totally fine. Like, do it when you're ready.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to be so sure that I'm with the right woman for me. And the longer we spend engaged, the more sure I am.
So. Good man. Steve. Yeah. How did you get the name Steve-O? You have to tell this story about your brief but probably wonderful time at the University of Miami.
Yeah, there wasn't much to it. I was always drunk. My friends tended to be always drunk. Keg parties were events where I would make a point of acting out in some ridiculous way. And while I was acting out, that inspired my drunken friends to scream. And it was just born of drunk people screaming, Steve-O! You know? And that was really as simple as it was, the origin of Steve-O. So I guess you say, what's the O stand for? And the genuine answer is nothing.
It doesn't stand for anything. It's people going, Steve, oh, shit, look at what that guy just did. Can I ask you, like, let me get inside your head a little bit. When do you start, like, just recognizing that you have this really strange ability to turn off fear and do things that other people clearly have no and you know would not in their right mind do? Like, what prompts that kind of energy to come out? When do you start recognizing that this is something that people are paying attention to and I should kind of travel down this road?
Well, there's a kind of funny and kind of sad story from Venezuela.
No kidding.
When I was, I think it was my first day of nursery school. I'm actually reasonably sure that it was my very first day of nursery school. My mother was Canadian, and she went to pick me up from my first day of nursery school in Venezuela. And the women working at the nursery school, they said, you know, Esteban, you know, Steve. It's tremendo.
He's a great kid. He's lovely.
No. That my mom thought that what they were saying, that I was tremendous.
Tremendous.
Great compliment. But as my mom related this to her Spanish-speaking friends, they said, oh, no. Tremendo doesn't mean tremendous or wonderful. Tremendo means like really terrible. That's the Spanish trend. Like,
that's right.
You know, it was always kind of a funny anecdote in the family, but then years later, when I was watching the Blackfish documentary about the orcas at SeaWorld, they had this lady, I believe, can you let her out? They had this lady who was describing having witnessed the mangled body of her son who had been torn apart by an orca. And she described the
sight. I remember this.
She said that seeing her son all torn apart by a killer whale was tremendo.
Not exactly something you want to be lined up with.
Right. Now, I don't know. I have no idea what the behavior was which inspired the label of tremendo when I was 2 years old. But there was something going on there. And,
You just kind of always felt it? Like, it was always a part of you? Like, hey, I just have this energy and I want to get it out in these ways.
Yeah, I would say so. There was just always something. I was 6 years old and jumped off of a full-size refrigerator and landed on a nail. And
holy shit.
Yeah, like I was like somewhere in my leg. I feel like it was on my shin or something. And I had to get stitches. So there is like some stuntiness going on. Apparently, like the first stuntiness. Yeah, like apparently my first attempt at walking, like I somehow knocked out teeth. But you imagine that you walk before you have teeth, but I don't know. Like
That's not true. Children have teeth long before they walk, or at least in my experience they do. So I think when you're walking, you do have front teeth at least.
Then that checks out.
Yeah, there you go.
I went a little overboard my first try at walking and knocked out my front teeth.
Do you have regular pain sensors? Do you have like a regular pain receptor? It just doesn't register, does it?
It's not. It's not that it doesn't register, because if I didn't register pain,
it wouldn't be as entertaining. You wouldn't have the fear. Yeah.
There wouldn't be the trepidation to build the suspense or the, you know, the reaction to pay off the bit. The simple fact with me is that my desire for attention outweighs my desire for comfort.
Do you attention? Once you start getting that attention, it's kind of addictive, right? It's like, what now that I have something that people are giving me attention for, and I find that I'm good at it and I just go for it now. And does that like manifest itself through high school and college? And that's where people are like, Steve, oh shit.
You know, I wish that was the case, but it wasn't really working for me when I was young.
Yeah.
You know, like I have a memory of third grade, like 8 years old. We were living in Miami, Florida, and I gathered the kids around in the cafeteria to watch me unscrew a salt shaker and just consume mass quantities of salt from it. Nobody thought. That everybody just thought it was kind of creepy and nobody really enjoyed that.
You became misunderstood because they were like, oh my God, what is that kid doing? And so maybe the attention at that age is a little bit different, obviously, than it is when you're starring in Jackass 4.
Yeah, I mean, it was not necessarily really good. I remember when I was 10 years old in fifth grade, one of, or perhaps even my last baby teeth was
loose.
But not really loose yet. I knew that if I ripped it out like too soon, there would be a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And, I went into class and told this girl I was sitting next to that I could leave whenever I wanted. I didn't have to be in class that day. And she looked at me like I was a weird creep. And then when the class started, I ripped out the tooth super violently and there was all this blood. And I raised my hand to the teacher and the teacher said, go to the nurse. And I got up and said to the girl, like, see, I told you so. And like, so that girl just thought I was a creep too.
We had this.
Everybody just thought I was a creep.
We had this guy on. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, David, like I handled that poorly right there. I was just going to say that there was a particularly it pierced my heart. And it's sad to say that that's the case, but in, I'm going to guess, 2009, maybe 2010.
Okay.
I was setting about putting together my first book, which was a memoir called Steve-O, Professional Idiot. And my sister, being the family historian, pulled out all the files that she had compiled over the years for me to have kind of resources for my book. And in going through them, I found a report card from sixth grade, which was me when I was 12 years old. And there was a comment from my homeroom teacher, Mrs. Iaquessa, which read, Steve, I'm paraphrasing, but it said Steve's basically desperate for the approval and praise of his peers.
Oh.
You know, the affection, the approval, the praise. But everything that he does, seeking this approval and praise brings about the opposite results.
Mm.
You know, it was a story, and it, reading that, I was reading that as an adult in my 30s, and it was just like,
I could
feel the pain of that little kid, you know, feel the pain of that little kid who wanted so desperately to be loved and tried so hard to be loved, but the way that I tried so hard just made everybody feel like I was a creep.
That really resonates with me. I mean, it worked out okay for you.
Yeah, I mean, that characterized my childhood. You know, I think there's an element of alcoholism in that, like the idea of just constantly feeling uncomfortable in my skin.
Yeah,
you know, like alcoholics. Very often, it's generally accepted as a trait of alcoholism, this feeling of always being irritable, restless, and discontent. Mm. And then people could sum it up by just saying uncomfortable in my own skin.
I agree with you.
Yeah, man. I just wasn't comfortable, man. I had a very uncomfortable childhood.
I know you've been to many therapy sessions just like I have. And my therapist will often say, that's the little boy, Brian, talking, right? Crying out for attention, crying out for acceptance, crying out for something. And you know what? Every time she says it to me, it fucking rips my heart out. It really does, because I know she's speaking the truth. And so to connect with that, many, many years later, you read this report card and you see this was the little boy, Steve, looking for attention. And the teacher so aptly pointed out, maybe he's not getting the kind of attention he so desperately wants. And that weird energy, right, that energy that you had turned into something that really has become who you are. It's the definition of Steve, at least to the outside world. It's the definition of Steve O. And you've become a great success. You are a fucking movie star. And quite frankly, you're a legend. Tina and I, who's sitting here with me, Tina and I, you know, we're in the age group that has squarely watched you grow up on TV. And you're just like, there's something about you, Steve, that is so real and authentic, even when you're doing things that are absolute insanity to the rest of us. We're all sitting there watching, cringing. There's something so authentic about Steve O and your journey, just as from, watching you from the first season of Jackass to who you are today on Wild Ride. We've grown up with you. You've grown up. We've grown up. We've all become a little bit more mature. How, when you're doing Bucket List, which is your new special that's out there, and we'll tell people how to get there, and we'll put a link on the show notes. When you're doing Bucket List and you are taking it to the extreme, you clearly are scared of some of these things. Like the opening shot, I don't want to give it away because I want people to watch it, but the opening shot, Steve, yeah, it looks like you're going to lose your fucking legs. I mean, it's crazy. When you're doing that stunt, are you like, holy shit, Steve, what the fuck are you doing? Or are you just in some other zone? Like, you know, this is what I do. This is what I want to do.
Well, first off, there were a lot of kind words there.
Thank you.
I mean it, by the way. I'm profoundly grateful. Well, yeah, I appreciate it a lot, man. I really do. I'm also not particularly precious about saying what's in my bucket list special, because I think that you can tell people, you know, my vision was to be on a roof and have a big helicopter over me, drop a rope ladder, which I grab with my bare hands, and get flown off and crashed through electrical wires and stuff like that, and let go and land on the roof of a moving tour bus. Like, you can say that to people and not really ruin it. You know,
guys,
that was ambitious.
Guys, and, when you see this special, Steve is literally hanging off a fucking helicopter and he drops himself onto a moving RV where the landing is less than spectacular, but he pulls it off. I thought you were going to die, man. I was like, holy shit, there he goes. That's Steve's last stunt.
Yeah, like, it wasn't even planned when the bus hit me.
Yeah.
While I was on the ladder like that, it was very, very scary. And, yeah, I loved it, man. It was the most expensive stunt that I've ever put together. And it really worked.
It worked exactly well.
The way I wanted it to work. Actually, it even worked better. And my bucket list special is very much like that. You know, from start to finish, it's ambitious. There's the one where I get shot up with general anesthesia drugs while I'm riding
this is
bicycle.
This is my next question. Tell this story. How do you convince a fucking doctor?
Yeah, go for it.
How do you convince a fucking doctor to put general anesthesia in you? How did you do that?
I didn't make this as clear in the special. What we really did, I said we spoke with a few anesthesiologists. I went on my Instagram story and I put my story out on Instagram saying, hey, if you're a general anesthesia specialist, or maybe I said if you're just a
anesthesiologist,
yeah, please reach out to my guy, Scott Randolph. And it's really remarkable how, like, 100% of the time that I've ever asked for some random help on social media, even if it's I need drugs to be stolen from a hospital and administered while I'm riding a bicycle through a field, you know, it wasn't on social media that the epidural stunt took shape, but it's always worked, man. It's always worked.
You got to see the special. It's fucking fantastic. I want to move back one second, Steve. Do you have like the world's best health insurance, or are people just like, you know, you must see the doctor quite a bit, I would imagine, in your line of work. And tell me when's the last time? Go ahead.
I'm seeing the doctor more and more, and it's not even. I really don't think it's because of stunts. I think it's just the fact that, you know, I'm 49 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I really tomorrow I'm going in. Tomorrow I'm having surgery on my knee to repair a torn meniscus. And it's not from a stunt. It's just wear and tear.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, I think it happened while I was riding a bicycle. And not the general anesthesia bike ride.
Not the one where you went to sleep? Yeah.
Then again, it was from a stunt that I got the collarbone hardware put in, and it was from a stunt that I got the ankle hardware put in. And it was from a stunt that I got the skin grafts all over my body. Not all over my body, all over my arms and my back.
Yeah, I mean, you may not have had all the doctor's visits because of the stunts, but you've probably had quite a few. Is there, like, when you go to do a Jackass, there must be an incredible amount of attention paid to how we're going to insure the people that are on this movie and just getting clearances to do that, all those stunts.
You know, it wasn't until Jackass 3D in 2010 that I first asked, hey, what happens if somebody gets like really badly hurt or killed?
And the answer was?
They said, standard workman's comp laws apply.
Standard.
I'm sure there's insurance stuff too, but yeah, like when I broke my collarbone on the set of the fourth Jackass movie, and it was like a workman's comp claim.
That's insane. That's insane. I would have imagined you guys would have been insuranced up in seven different ways to Sunday, but maybe
insurance too.
Yeah, of course.
Insurance too.
What is the craziest stunt that you have done, a part of, you know, on your own bucket list, Jackass, any of the series, any of the television shows? What is the craziest stunt that you did that you just would never do again? I'm just done with it. I would never attempt that again.
There are plenty of things that I wouldn't do again. But I would probably say the one with the burns, the fire angels.
Yeah.
That was the big closing stunt, the grand finale of my second comedy special, which was called Gnarly. And that one lives just for free streaming, like at stevo.com if you want to watch that. It just starts playing right away.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, like, and you got badly hurt on that one. Burned. Like,
yeah,
skin grafts.
That was the one. Like, I mean, I laid down in a bed of rocket engine fuel and did snow angels while my buddies lit the fuel.
Who comes up with these ideas? You specifically, or is it like you and your friends or the production team? You all get together and you brainstorm ideas, and then you see if they're even feasible. And then what's the process?
I mean, the ideas come in different ways, and the process certainly varies. But in that case, the idea was to just blow up my living room with me in it. It was actually inspired by my relationship with my girl. At the time, it was my girlfriend who's now my fiance, and I just felt like very strongly that this was a relationship that I was committed to. And to look at my house at the time, it was very much the house that I, you know, kind of decorated as a bachelor. And it was, you know, my bachelor pad. And I no longer wanted it to feel like my girl was, you know, in my house. I wanted it to feel like it was our house.
Our house. Yes, yeah. Totally.
So my way of making that, I said, I want to blow up the living room. I want to, like, really screw up all that's requiring us to paint over everything. And that, you know, and then I want my girl to lead the charge in decorating it to make it feel like our house.
Tina, this shows a level of maturity. This shows a level of maturity. Yes. It really does. Self-awareness and maturity. Because I know a lot of guys who refuse to change a damn thing. It's my place. It's my house. I'm keeping it the way that I want it. But I knew early on that if you wanted to invite a woman to live with you or your girlfriend or whatever it happens to be, if you want to do that, they have to feel like it's their place too. Not that just a couple dresses are hanging in extra space in your closet.
That is correct.
They have to feel like they're part of the game, right?
Yes.
Because I would want that too. So it's absolutely just like a bit of self-awareness. Look at you, Steve. You're all grown up, buddy.
Yeah, it was pretty rad. Like, I want to blow up the living room. Didn't really do a whole lot of damage to the living room.
You know? More damage to yourself.
We did like we got to, I mean, we made a little bit of a mess, but yeah, the damage was primarily to myself, and yeah, I mean, it was just a crazy thing, man. It was and whenever I've gotten hurt doing stunts, you know, thankfully I've recovered from everything for the most part. And the more consequential, the more hurt I got, it's always just made the stunt more notable. It's been more of a notch in my belt. So there's nothing really to regret about any of that for me. And, you know, like once something epic's happened, like it's happened, there's not really there's got to be a compelling reason to go and do something again.
Exactly. It's you adding to the art piece, right? I look at your career and you've just done so many things that are notable in my own head. And then, you know, talking to people that knew that you were coming on the show, you got to ask him about this stunt. You got to ask him about that stunt. And I think everybody feels the same way. It's like, holy shit, look at this guy's career. He's still alive. He's still walking and talking. And he has done all this stuff at his own expense for the enjoyment of the people on the other end. And probably you're getting something out of it too, obviously. But that relationship between the audience and you, all of it's on celluloid, which is the great thing too. What I see, like, on YouTube, and then I see somebody doing similar things for, like, you know, 10 views. Now, listen, this could be the beginning of the next Steve-O, or it could just be some kid, you know, breaking his arm for a couple of views. But you really have made a pretty storied career out of this. Can you walk into an airport or into a mall or, you know, Target, wherever you go shopping, can you walk into one of those places and not be recognized? I'm sure during the pandemic it might have been easier because of the mask, but like, if you don't have any mask on and you just walk in, do you get recognized enough that it becomes like, oh shit, I gotta go into Target?
The mask never helps.
Oh really?
Yeah, because as soon as I open my mouth,
it's,
I mean,
the voice,
like, I get recognized over the phone.
Oh yeah.
If I try to order a pizza. I mean, not all the time, but it's not infrequent.
Why do you talk this way? Is this like, is this just a gravelly voice? Or I think one of our intrepid researchers heard that you speak with your muscles and not with your vocal cords or something like that.
That's what I'm told.
Has it always been like that?
I don't know. I just suck at talking.
You graduated from Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Clown School, but you didn't actually go to work for the circus. Is that right?
I didn't work for the Ringling Circus. I worked for a circus called the Hannaford Family Circus.
Oh.
And I worked as a clown on Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines.
Oh my God, you're kidding me.
Nope.
So you're on these Royal Caribbean cruises. Are you testing some of these ideas that you have for doing crazy stunts? Or are you just taking it like, it's a job, I go out, I do my clown show, and then I call it a day?
I mean, I filmed crazy stunts on the cruise ships, and the line between what I did, you know, in my professional role on the cruise ships versus what I was doing as extracurricular for my aspirations and my video camera, that line got a little bit blurry. Certainly got blurry, but yeah.
When you were filming these, is this what eventually became like the tapes that you were trying to get into Big Brother and you were, or were you just, was this pre or post, or?
I was already in Big Brother.
Yeah.
When I got the cruise ship job. It was before going on to the cruise ship that the Big Brother boob video came out. So yeah, that was all happening. But there were like certain things, like one of the clowns I worked with while we were in the office typing up our weekly report.
one of the clown report on Royal Caribbean.
Like, you know, the job that we had, it was called Interactive Performers. And you know, the different things that we did, it was kind of an experimental thing. Like, we were the first to have this job. So the company wanted a weekly report of what we did.
Okay, gotcha.
And we were typing up our report, and this clown that I worked with just grabbed the stapler off the desk and just whacked himself with it. And sure enough, he had a staple in his arm. And I thought, wow, that's like the coolest thing I've ever seen. And we got paid in cash on the cruise ship, like every other week. Like every 2 weeks we got paid, and we made like $600 a week. So it was more than $1,000 that we got paid every 2 weeks in cash. And it was all $100 bills.
Holy shit.
The next time we got paid, I with my friend's blessing, I was like, man, do you mind if I take this staple thing? And I filmed a bit called the $1,000 Man, where I stapled 10 $100 bills across my arms and my chest, and I called myself the $1,000 Man.
Did you do this in front of people? Where, how was it received on the Royal Caribbean? I'm trying to imagine Steve-O stapling hundreds to himself.
We did it. We did it in the same office.
Gotcha.
Where we typed up the
reports.
Yeah.
I've had friends who entertained on cruise ship. Like they were, you know, one guy did a piano and the other girl did a guitar or whatever. What was it like living on a cruise ship? How long did you do that job for?
I lasted for 6 months. I had a 6 month contract, and other clowns. And we were a troop of four clowns on this one ship, and all three of the other clowns went to the cruise ship brass and said, "If Steve-O comes back for another contract, we all quit."
Probably some of the guests.
Yeah, it was a clown mutiny. They said, "If Steve-O comes back, we all quit."
Holy shit.
Yeah, so my boss clown, when I saw my boss clown, who wasn't part of my troop, he was like, "Man, these fucking clowns went behind your back, and they made it so you're not coming back for another contract." They're like, "It's not in the cards. You're not coming back, definitely not." And they don't have the balls to tell you that. And I don't want him to do you like that. He said, "I'm telling you, this job is going away. You do not have this job at the end of your contract, so I'm telling you to call up your skateboard buddies and try and drum up another gig." And he said, if I let it be known that he told me that he would lose his job. So I had to keep it a secret, and I had to work with these fucking clowns for another, it was like another 2 months. It was another 2 months, and we were training for the launch, the maiden voyage of the world's largest cruise ship.
Yeah.
There were all these routines, these scripts and stuff that I had to learn with these other clowns, knowing that I would never perform them.
and that the other clowns had stabbed you in the back.
And they couldn't know that I knew.
Yeah, because it was all hush-hush.
Yeah, and I pulled it off. I pulled it off, and I reached out to Big Brother, and I was like, "Yo, I got this idea, like I'm gonna," because I'd been walking on stilts on the cruise ships, and always terrified.
That sounds terribly dangerous. It's like you fall off the edge.
Yeah, we're never like, it wasn't even about falling off the edge of the ship, but it was just falling in general.
Yeah, because the ship's moving. Yeah.
So because I was, you know, I was kind of front of my mind, and I thought, man, I got to do it. So I'm gonna tip myself over on stilts, and I was like, but I got to make it big and rad. So I called up Jeff Tremaine. I was like, I'm going to have a stilt costume, which will be lit on fire. while my stilt costume's on fire, I'm going to have a unicyclist ride a unicycle through my stilts while a skateboarder jumps off the roof of a house over my head and through a fireball that I'm blowing out of my mouth. So the photo will be the skateboarder going through the fireball that I'm blowing out of my mouth while the unicyclist rides through the stilts. I'm on fire. And then when those two guys ride away, then I'm going to crack open a beer and pound it while I tip myself over. And then when I hit the ground, I need to be extinguished. And I wanted that to be the cover of Big Brother magazine.
Wow.
Tremaine liked the idea, and I walked off the cruise ship with like $9,000 in cash, which was not clever of me to have been stashing all that cash in my cabin on the cruise ship.
Especially not with those fucking backstabby clowns.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe I put some of it in the bank. I don't know. But there was a bunch of cash that I had. And, you know, I flew myself back and forth to California to do to do big stunts to try to get noticed. And when I got out to California with the fire stunt, that's when I met Knoxville. Tremaine waited until I was out there, and he was like, "Hey, dude, like, now that you're out here, I can tell you this isn't just for the magazine. We're doing this for a pilot."
Jeez.
And yeah, I did that fire stunt for the pilot. It didn't make the cover, but the photo was the table of contents, the whole page.
Yeah.
So it was pretty rad. Yeah, we got a cool photo out of that. And then kind of the rest is history. And had those clowns. And you know what? Like, I do owe it to those clowns. For me to, I can't provide history.
Yeah, you know, fair enough.
The reality is, the truth is, I gave those clowns every reason to, I was very disrespectful of those clowns. I did not think they were fucking rad. I didn't think they had any like skills that I admired. I didn't think that their stupid shit that they were trying to come up with was funny or rad. I just didn't think anything that they did was awesome at all. And as such, I had no respect for them, and I behaved very much with
disdain.
I mean, not disdain as much. I just didn't have time for them. I was whatever you guys want to do. And I would just have my headphones on, practicing my juggling, and just I ignored them, and I was disrespectful. And so, they had every reason to do what they did. And thank God they did what they did, because if I kept that job for another contract,
you wouldn't have been Jackass.
Yeah, there goes the Jackass pilot. There goes the whole thing. So,
Steve, name one of those clowns who made $1 billion at the box office.
That's right.
I think everything turned out okay.
I don't think Jackass made any $1 billion.
No, I'm talking about all of it together. You guys. Do you think you've made $1 billion on all four movies?
No.
So, well, that's a damn shame. You should have made $1 billion.
I think we probably cracked a $500 million. But all four movies put together, definitely not $1 billion.
Honestly, anything over $10,000 sounds rich to me.
That's right.
Good. You have to, if you can, please touch on one thing. True or not true, you did blow with Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of it for hours.
Were you not at all intimidated? Do you know him? You guys had like a previous relationship and then you hung out one night and somebody had some blow? Or...
Now, pretty sure it was the first time we ever met, and I had a bunch of cocaine, and we locked ourselves in a bathroom for probably 3 hours until we had consumed it all.
Wow. And what is the conversation like with Mike Tyson when everyone's high? Are you guys like really, listen, I've done quite a bit of blow myself, and I know what those conversations can be like, you know, hours long, yeah. Meandering. We're talking about saving the world. And then you wake up in the morning and all you want is a beer and to go back to bed. But what do you guys talk about? Do you remember any of it? I mean, you don't have to share anything super personal, but.
For sure. I think that the final thought Mike's parting comment was that everybody's got Steve-O wrong, that Steve-O's actually very intelligent.
Wow.
Yeah. Who? He said, everybody's got you wrong. You're a smart guy.
Wow. Really? To have Mike Tyson say that to you, I'd just be a little nervous. I mean, listen, I don't know Mike Tyson, and he seems like a perfectly lovely guy. You know, he also has matured, and you listen to him sometimes, and you're like, wow, Mike Tyson really got his shit together. Like, he knows what he's talking about. He's almost like a philosopher in some ways, right? And but I don't know, just me personally being stuck in a bathroom with Mike Tyson doing blow, I'd be like, oh, I hope this doesn't go the wrong way. I hope he also thinks I'm intelligent, so I don't get hit. Steve.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, and I know I shared a little bit earlier on in the conversation, but I see Arla, and Tina's been a friend of mine for 30 plus years, and we've been big fans since you guys came on air. And I have to say that I feel like our life path have gone similar directions, and it's just such a pleasure to talk to you and know that the authenticity that we kind of felt through the screen is really there. You're a really cool guy, and I'm so grateful that you came on the show.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I for you to know about the stilt stunt for Big Brother, that's going deep, man. That was a long time ago, and it's pretty rad, dude.
If I'm gonna have Steve-O on, I'm gonna ask questions that I sincerely want answers to, not ones that I already have answers to. So, and you know, we do our homework. We don't want to sound like total idiots once we get on air.
I love it, man. I love it. I appreciate it. And yeah, man, sounds like you checked out my bucket list special too.
We did, and we're gonna encourage our listeners to do so. Also, Steve-O, podcaster, stunt maker, philosopher. Engaged for a long time guy, and doesn't matter because he'll do it when he's ready. And I'd like to consider you a friend of the commercial break now too. Will you come back on sometime, Steve?
Sure, man. I love it. Where does this live?
It's in Atlanta. Oh, it lives on YouTube, but it really, where the audience is on the podcast, on the audio version. So of course we'll send you a link. We'll get in touch with you.
I love it.
And send all the information, and come back on sometime. We love you. Best to you. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, man. Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
No problem. Glad to have you. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, dude.
Let's cut to the chase. We love you, and we want to hear your sweet, angelic voices asking us for advice. So give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 626-ASK-TCB3. If you're not ready for that kind of commitment, which I understand, send us a text instead at 855-TCB-8383. And as always, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And this wouldn't be a TCB promo if I didn't tell you to go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/The Commercial Break, to watch all of our amazing video edits. You can also go to tcbpodcast.com to find everything we have ever put on the website. Let's listen to some sponsors, and then we are back on track, baby. Love you. Bye.
Oh my gosh, what a fun time with Steve. He couldn't have been more gracious.
Absolutely fantastic.
I am still tripping over that story about Mike Tyson and doing blow for 5 hours with Mike Tyson.
I can't believe he said locked in the bathroom.
Locked in the bathroom with Mike Tyson. And listen, I've seen lots of recent video. We've all seen Mike Tyson since his heyday as a crazy and crazy talented boxer. He would destroy human beings, and everybody was afraid of him. But he seems like he's gotten some self-awareness and some perspective on life. He's almost like a philosopher now.
Super chill.
A philosopher with a really weird voice, but a philosopher nonetheless. Yes. Doesn't he raise pigeons? I think he does. I think he's a pigeon raiser.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me either. It's like the biggest example of brute force in our lifetime, Mike Tyson.
Absolutely.
Is like petting pigeons. He did this whole documentary about petting pigeons or something. It was really fascinating. But then when Steve says the clowns voted me off the island, like the clown stabbed me in the back, I just
too
lost
much.
My shit.
And then he said the boss clown.
Oh yeah, the boss clown.
I'm just imagining thugs, you know, like
yeah. And how do you not get hired on the circus that paid you to train
outrageous
in the circus? It's
only,
outrageous
only Steve.
But I like Here's what I like about Steve, and I'm trying to convey the message. I hope I did appropriately. Steve also has some perspective now in his later life. I think now that he's sobered up and he's probably sure. been to more therapy meetings than we'll ever go to in our entire life. He's just got some self-awareness, and there's not a bit, not an air of anything about him. He came on. He
super authentic, so genuine. Yeah. Very humble.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I'm really grateful Me that Steve too. Decided to come on. That
I hope we get him back one day.
We will get him back.
Yeah.
I have a feeling he'll come back. And Chrissy's not here. But if you had told Chrissy and I at the beginning of this crazy adventure, or even a month ago, that Steve O would agree to come on the commercial break, we probably would have laughed you out of the room.
Yes.
Because this is the most mediocre comedy podcast available. I have a feeling none of Steve's people listened to the show before they agreed to come on. But we're so grateful that he did decide to come on. Yeah, so all the pertinent details are available inside of the show notes. Let me remind you, go check out his special bucket
Hilarious.
List. Pay a
go
few bucks.
It. Yeah.
Go watch it. It's not money wasted. If you're a fan of anything Jackass or Steve-O, you're going to love this. Also, check out his podcast, Wild Ride. It's good. And he's got some real big-time celebrities that walk in the door. I was watching the Johnny Knoxville one. Can I hear you? No? Why can't I hear you? What happened to you? I don't know. All right. Tina went away. But there you are. I don't know what happened there. But let me give you the pertinent details for this show. TCBpodcast.com, as Christina says, go there for everything that we've ever put on the website. You can also dial us up at 1-626-ASK-TCB, the number 3. That's 626-ASK-TCB, the number 3. You can leave us a voicemail or text us. Comments, questions, concerns, content ideas, ask Brian's mom, ask TCB. You need advice, we're here not to give it. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love it. You want your piggy fronting sticker? Let me move backwards a little bit. You want your piggy fronting sticker? They are available. You can go to the website, hit the contact us button. The drop-down menu says, I want my free sticker. Give us your address, and then 7 to 10 days later, we'll send it off in the mail. It takes about 2 weeks to get to you. So leave Astrid alone!
Poor Astrid.
Poor Astrid. Also, at the commercial break on Instagram for clips of the show. We'll put some clips of Steve-O up there, of course. TCB podcast on TikTok. And then YouTube.com/the commercial break. Here's what we're doing. We're putting out clips of the regular episodes, and then we're editing and putting out the full episodes for the interview, so you guys have a chance to see and hear your favorite celebrities here on the commercial. See and hear your favorite celebrity.
Oh, yeah, Steve-O's got to be one of my favorite celebrities.
Oh, my God.
Incredible.
But he is now, that's
yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure. In all of my celebrity interactions, I will tell you that I've had two in the last 3 weeks. Heather McMahon, yeah. And Steve-O. They...
Fantastic.
They're just, like, fast friends. And we'll probably never talk to him again. But hey, at least we got one opportunity
right.
to do it. So go to the YouTube.com/the commercial break. Subscribe, like on your favorite video, comment, all that good stuff. You know how to do it. We want to thank you for being the best listeners in the podcast universe. Keep those reviews and comments coming. We just love them. Oh, and Chrissy will be back for season number 5. I talked to her just a couple days ago. Guys, send all your... thoughts and prayers, guys. Thoughts and prayers.
Right.
All right, that's all I can do for today. But I'll tell you that I love you.
I love you.
Best to you, Tina.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Tina and I always say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.